Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Battlestar Galactica Season 3 Recap. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Yay!
Hey!
Hello, my geeklings!
Once again,
it's Geeks On.
Can you believe it is already April?
Yes.
Yep.
Crazy.
Bang.
Crazy. Our first April episode. It's crazy.
Yep.
Year's going so fast.
It's like, boom, like right by. I mean, I sort of understand it because I was in the writer's strike, but like, boom, April, immediately.
I know. It's like...
I don't even remember February.
Did last year go by just as fast for you guys?
No, I don't
really?
Think so.
Last year is a big blur for me.
My whole life is a big blur for me.
Because you're getting older. Yeah.
I do remember desperately trying to get home in time, you know, before 4 p.m. on the school bus, hoping to catch Battle of the Planets distinctly. I mean, like it was yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was
that
yesterday.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Hollywood, and I'm a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
My name is Pete Robinson. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
I jumped on the Hollywood bandwagon today. You couldn't jump on the Hollywood bandwagon?
You know, I got to do the opposite. Whatever you do, I got to do the opposite.
It's because he got the new tooth.
No, it's anything to differentiate himself between
right,
you.
Right, exactly. So people...
we get that constant email, like, either Matt or Peter.
Have you
no
seen that one?
Who.
Yeah, where people write our name, Matt / Peter.
Yeah, it's pretty common, actually.
Crazy. How was your guys' geek week?
Well, other than the fact that being on Rainbow Six 2 after all the blah, 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 when are you late adopter? When are you going to get the game?
I've been busy.
So, what? Don't talk smack.
All right.
I've had very little free time, but what few spare minutes I've been able to scrape together, I have scraped together and put towards a very good cause. I, too, have now defeated Oblivion.
Oh. So, what?
Nice.
Yes.
Wow.
I have, and I ended it as Master of the Thieves Guild, the Assassins Guild, and the Fighters Guild.
You were Master of all three?
As Master of all three.
You were Master of your
I
domain?
I just got bored of the Mages Guild quest because I had no mage abilities whatsoever, so.
Wow. I'm not even close to becoming a master of anything.
You'd be surprised. All of a sudden, you're like, you know, bam. Oh, I'm the master.
I'm a master of alchemy.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, you should have like 10 more quests to do, and all of a sudden, you're the master. Yeah.
It's sort of abrupt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I am.
I'm a master of alchemy, and that's it. I can't even hold a sword, but I'm a master of alchemy.
I thought you re-rolled.
You did, and then I gave up because it just got so exhausting. I was like, I don't want to do this again.
Next time you do it, light armor, stealth. Marksmanship.
I have to say, I'm really looking forward to Fallout 3. It's the same guys, same developers, but I'm hoping that they'll have learned some lessons and we're going to see more advanced.
That'd be
and
cool.
And it's sci-fi.
The trailer to Fallout 3 looks amazing.
It's just a CG trailer.
Did you guys see those trailers for StarCraft, the new StarCraft 2 trailers?
I did see those.
Awesome. You mean the trailers or the footage?
The footage from in-game footage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you not like... How could you not like StarCraft?
No, I like StarCraft, but, you know, it's an old game, and it looks like the same game, but just awesome graphics. I don't know. It's kind of... I don't know.
Let me ask you a question.
It might be awesome. I'm not saying it isn't.
What game have you ever seen that was a follow-up to an old game that didn't look like the same game, but awesome graphics?
Grand Theft Auto 3, Metal Gear Solid 3...
Metal Gear Solid 3 looked a little different. But that was a totally new system that it was moving on to.
Well, yeah, so is this. 15 freaking years later.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, you know.
I suppose. I'll give you that.
I don't know. I'm not saying it's not going to be a good, great game. I'm just saying I'm not super jazzed. You know, I'm not Korean.
I saw it. It's true. It's really true.
It's true.
You're it's sad, 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 but true.
So incredibly
I saw Horton Hears a Who. I don't know if that counts as being geeky.
That.
I thought at first it was incredible. I liked it. I liked the sort of overtones of, you know, is he talking to a gigantic invisible elephant in the sky? But then I heard a review on NPR today, And it was Peter Sagal, who does this show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he has three daughters. And he talked about one specific point, is that they have invented this new plot line with the mayor, who has 96 daughters and one son. And he was like, and who do you think he gives all his attention to? The one son. And so he went on this rant about how Horton hears a who, how he's ignoring these 96 beautiful, wonderful, intelligent, different daughters so that his one son can become the heir to the throne.
Right.
And do we really need to inspire our children with this belief? Is this really what we need to tell them? And I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah, you know what? He's right. So put a little damper on it.
So flawed movie.
Well, now, in retrospect, it's like, it's like going to a movie with you, but you weren't there.
Right. So someone else,
did the work for me.
Perfect. I'm glad to see there's other people working on that to ruin movies for everybody. I'm actually watching, I got too late for me to finish it, this movie called Natural City. It's this Korean movie that's like Blade Runner.
Oh, and I have that.
It's freaking awesome.
Someone gave it to me as a gift, and I never got around to watching it.
You should put it in, because it's got, I mean, you know, it's a little messed up. I mean, the storytelling is very...
Korean.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like some...
Yeah, like The Host.
So apparently the Koreans are just not going to like us after this episode.
Right, yeah.
No, I mean,
we're picking on them this episode.
It's been a little while since we've harassed the Koreans.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about time, really. Yeah.
Anyway, but so far, I'm really liking it. So I can't wait to... can't wait to see how it ends. So anyway, and it's got some great design, and I can see why they put the tag, you know, the next Blade Runner, because it
really
definitely has some.
Did you see Old Boy?
No.
Old Boy is awesome.
It's a really interesting film. Very dark, very disturbing.
Yeah. Really
not
dark.
Not sci-fi.
No.
But it is
it asks difficult questions.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitively.
Well, shall we get to our geek news?
Let's get to geek news.
Cue the music.
Dun, 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 dun.
Not that music.
Dun, dun, dun.
This music.
All right. Who's going to start with this week's?
I'll roll it. All right. So, this week... I can't wait for all you corporate haters. Corporate Tattoos, the Pepsi Cola company, in search of more innovative ways to reach out to young consumers, once experimented with offering teenagers an intriguing deal. So the company has decided to sponsor teenagers to tattoo themselves with its corporate logos.
Oh, God.
In return for permanently branding themselves, the teenagers receive a lifetime 10% discount on the company's products.
Okay, I'm going to come glued again.
That's totally not worth it.
Wait, what product?
I don't object to this.
Right now it's Pepsi Cola Company, and I don't know what subsidiaries they have.
I don't object to this. I mean, as long as they have parental consent, I mean, we're talking high school students, right?
Pepsi on your skin! I mean, well, if you
this
get it removed.
This is not the first time this has happened. People have auctioned off their foreheads to have tattoos of corporate logos. You know, baby names have been auctioned off.
Was that on eBay? Guy auctioned his forehead on... Oh, my God.
Yeah. Breasts. A woman had a corporate logo tattooed between her breasts and agreed to wear low-cut shirts for the rest of her life.
If you're really into Coca-Cola or a Pepsi product...
How much do you want a 90-cent Pepsi can?
But if you... I mean, the corporation owns a lot of stuff. In the long run, if it's lifetime, it could save you some serious cash.
Look... If we're talking about like an Xbox and you get 10% off an Xbox, that's different.
Well, but this is lifetime. Who knows? Maybe they might come out with some game console in the future.
God.
Okay, I'm sorry. I gotta take Aaron's role on this one. That's some serious bullshit.
Peter against the man.
All right. I still say, you know, if you've got the money, you're almost an adult, you have parental consent, go for it. It's your own body. You get to be as dumb as you want to be.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
That's true. All right, who's next?
I say if you're over 18, you can be as dumb as you want to. Not even with parental consent. Anyone giving parental consent to that should be shot.
That's actually true, because there's this new reality show with these mothers who are stage moms for these kids. And, I mean... The things that they're putting these kids through, like, hey,
don't even want to be there.
The kids don't necessarily want to be there, but there's one, like, you're trying out for the new voice on this new show. And this mom was literally like, feel it. Feel the emotion. Come on, look at there. If you're looking at this, do you actually see a carton of milk? I want you to see the carton of milk. And I was like, every single mother on this show needs to be lined up, said, you're doing bad things to your child, and punched in the face once.
Or tattooed with
Pepsi. Or tattooed with Pepsi, yes.
By Mike Tyson.
God.
Aaron?
Oh.
Okay. My article is about the pro-artificial lifers. I found I don't know how long this has been going on, but I found this on the internet.
Pro-artificial lifers?
Pro-artificial lifers. They are in opposition to... I'm reading the article.
Is that anti-artificial choice?
Well, I'll listen up. They are in opposition to practices such as euthanasia of potential artificial or fabricated life, such as complex robots and high-level computer programs.
So if Asimo goes, you know, they decide they're going to scrap him because whatever.
Yes.
MCP Mr. Andrew Royd wants of to the live.
Mr. Andrew Royd of the Church of Science and Faith in Silicon Valley has started a movement to support Silicon life rights. Andrew says, day after day, hundreds and thousands of complex machines and computer programs are powered down and destroyed or discarded with absolutely no thought. But how do we know it wasn't complex enough to be called living? And who will speak for these artificial beings?
Wait. So my copy of Word, yeah, I'm not allowed to delete my copy of Word off my computer?
Well, probably. I think he's picking things at a certain level.
Like most scientists and computer programmers calmly chuckle at the church's views on the subject, claiming it's a little early to stand outside Circuit City throwing buckets of oil and machine grease at its customers. But you'll find this weekend, standing outside of California State Capitol, a small group of protesters with Hello World signs, trying to pass a bill that would prevent the arbitrary destruction of these potential life forms. Robert Ott, another pro-artificial lifer, or PAL, is also concerned. I was halfway through Halo 3 when it dawned on me. The Covenant moved, interacted, ran away frightened, and just seemed eerily real. How do I know that the AI isn't clever enough to have reached the next level, life? How will we ever know when this happens?
Oh my God.
It's best to be safe. Robert put down his controller and never turned off his Xbox for fear of ending lives of the artificial beings.
Yeah, till he got a red ring of death.
Update. Robert Ott's Xbox red ring the last week, and he's now suing Microsoft for $100,000 for each potential life form killed by the power down. That's 650 Covenant, around 40 humans, and he's unclear what to do about the flood.
Okay.
Is that nuts?
Okay. You know, people with OCD should not be allowed to...
Lawsuit people?
Lawsuits.
He didn't turn off his Xbox.
This dude has OCD. He's clearly got obsessive compulsive disorder.
But wait a minute. At what point do we, you know, is there a point in our future, maybe sooner or later, where this actually might happen? And when
Skynet comes online. That's my line.
But when will we know? When will we know?
When he flies the 240 perfect combat missions.
It's going to be when the computer starts talking to you, that's when you'll
they
know.
They can talk now.
When it says, don't kill me! Don't kill me!
That's what the Covenant does that.
Yeah.
They run around the screen. I'm just saying.
When the computer, not the Covenant.
This actually reminds me of this awesome Terry Pratchett book whose name escapes me at the moment.
Which one?
I think it's Johnny and the End of the World, or I don't remember. It's one of the Johnny books where he's playing a video game and it's like Space Invaders. Mm-hmm. And all the Space Invaders stop and a message comes up on the screen saying, we surrender. And through the rest of the book, the pixelated aliens that are trying to communicate with anyone playing the game, begging them for mercy.
See? I'm just saying...
When that happens, that's how you know.
Yeah. But how will you know that's not a programmed response or the thing is actually...
When you can carry out a conversation with it.
That has happened.
Hold on. I have to point out here. I'm the one who believes you can't fall in love with robots. You're the one who believes you can, but you're okay. You're not okay. You're against the idea of turning them off?
I'm just saying that there's going to be a point in
you're pro-killing them, but pro-falling in love with them, too.
Wait, what would I say pro-killing?
Well, you seem to be painting these people as absolute insane.
No, I'm actually saying they have a point. They have a point that there's going to be a time in which maybe that we make something so clever it might be a life form and we're not going to know it and we're going to be enslaving them or destroying them or just casually doing what we want with them and we don't know.
If it looks like Monica Miller, I'm perfectly fine with
it. But these guys are saying it could be happening now. We should just be safe.
They might even come back, wipe us all out, and leave only 40,000 of us on a small fleet trying to escape the solar system.
All right, fine. You're making fun of me.
So there's two things I want to throw in here. There's a thing called the Turing test.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Turing test is basically...
Isn't that what they talk about in Blade Runner?
No, they have a...
What's that test called?
This is something different.
Yeah.
Okay.
VoigtConf.
That's VoigtConf, right, right, right.
The Turing test is where you basically have two people... You have a person communicating through a computer to two different... through two different computers. And through one computer, they're actually talking to a real human being. And through the other computer, they're talking to a computer program.
Mm-hmm. Typing messages.
Typing messages. And the Turing test is when you can no longer tell the difference between which one's human. Mm. Okay? That's when, you know... So... The two things I wanted to mention is, one, I heard about this scammer, okay? You know the Nigerian scammers?
Yeah.
And how people...
That's a scam?
And how people have been trying to scam the scammers. They've been trying to screw with them. Mm-hmm. So what this guy did was he got them to start talking to his Turing test program so that they keep on just communicating to the program. You know, like just these long messages.
Running a scientific experiment.
Right. And he couldn't tell?
I guess you couldn't tell.
Well, what does that say?
And then the other one I saw was – I saw a great Dilbert comic where Dilbert comes in to talk to his boss. And the boss is just saying stuff that makes no sense. And he finally says, congratulations, you're the first human being to fail the Turing test.
I'm just saying the pals have a point.
Okay. Fine.
All right.
So my article is Apple – this is some serious bullshit. Apple has lost the trademark rights to use the letter I in any of its products.
What?
Apparently.
You got it.
Due to a minor clerical error on a trademark application, Apple has lost the trademark in another company, Unlimited Copyright Solutions, based out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, claims to be the actual copyright holder for the names of many of its popular products.
Oh my God. Well, I know they got in trouble with the iPhone, but they bought it out, right?
Yeah.
So now they're going to lose that as well?
Here's how it goes.
Apparently, UCS...
It's just going to be the phone.
It's going to be the phone.
Apparently, UCS is renowned for entering trademark claims for large... against large companies capitalizing on errors, swooping up the copyrights, and then demanding exorbitant compensation for the use of trademark names. UCS is part of a new expanding form of companies engaged with industries called predatory copywriting. In this case, in 1990, UCS copyrighted the letter I. Said copyright was granted, and UCS claims this gives them the copyright over all the products Apple sells which prominently use the letter I, including the iPhone, the iPod, iTunes, iPhoto, iDVD, and all the others.
Oh, so let's. So now
Apple's going to drown them in lawsuits.
So now they've got the phone, the pod, the music,
tunes, photo, and DVD. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
They now have refused to let Apple continue to use the name unless they receive half of Apple's profits on each of these products sold in the United States.
No.
This is a particular problem for the iPhone, which has just been released, or as the media is now calling it, quote unquote, the appliance formerly known as the iPhone, or TAFNAP for short. Apple is desperately...
I kind of like the TAFNAP.
TAFNAP, yeah.
Apple TAFNAP is desperately seeking to rebrand the TAFNAP's image. They've had to get rid of all their popular commercials. And
so they're actually going into certain things?
They have to. They don't have a choice because they're shut down for the moment.
Oh, come on!
So April Pazzo, head of the public relations for Apple, said that some of the names currently under consideration are... the U-phone.
Not going to happen.
The iPhone, spelled A-Y-E.
Not going to happen.
The Mobile Media Manager, or MM for short.
It's kind of like the Wii. I mean, it's almost as bad.
Well, what is the Wii stand for?
Apparently,
it's the same for shit.
It's just Wii.
Wii!
Apparently, UCS has also copyrighted you, me, my, and we as well when they copyrighted I, which could lead to future lawsuits. Steve Jobs is quoted as saying, "This is a sad day for Apple and a sad day for the world."
That's stupid.
Well, but I mean, come on. If you're going to allow these people to trademark, then if you got the I, you have the I. I mean, they should have checked.
You know, I
they're going to drown them in lawsuits.
It's complete bogus bullshit. I don't think this was the way it was meant to be used. And I'm sure that they're going to – I mean, you know that judges do this all the time at lower levels. They have some bizarre ruling. I'm sure that Apple's going to challenge it. But for the moment, they're shut down and they have to act as if they didn't – they're going to lose. They have to pretend.
Crazy pants.
I'm sure – you know what? This is – there's a rumor that a new iPhone or new – is going to be out.
The TAFNAP.
The new will come out with the new G3, but they might have to push that. That might not come out till next year or maybe year after that.
Crazy pants.
I totally want the TAFNAP. I really like that.
You
name.
Want the TAFNAP.
I like
that. Well, you own an
I do own an I'll get the new
I'm sure they're I'm sure that this is going to be overturned, but we'll have to wait and
see. Yeah.
All right. So spam is out of the world.
We're out of this, tell me about
we're out of this world. A torrent of interplanetary spam has been found responsible for crippling the onboard computer of NASA's Spirit rover in this January.
Interplanetary spam.
Yeah, the communications between us and the rover somehow got
jackass Nigerian effing sent a effing thing to the rover.
By the way, Mombasa, I want my freaking account
exactly.
back.
Exactly. So Spirit lay crippled on the Martian surface for 2 weeks after a glitch in its onboard spam filtering saw countless offers of pornography, cheap drugs, choke its flash memory, according to NASA spokeswoman Shirley Knott. It would appear that Russian spammers obtained Spirit's email address from a leaked internal NASA mailing list. So, yeah, I mean, technicians solved the problem by upgrading artificial intelligence on both Spirit and its twin Opportunity. So she said, the rovers now have enough sense not to respond to spam or to open unknown email attachments, which makes them smarter than your average person.
but you know
I'm
what?
I'm sick and tired of this spam bullshit, especially if it's, I mean, that's fucking like
billions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God!
But I'm like they probably should have spent the 1995 for Spy Doc. Yeah. You know,
apparently the rover, you know, passes the Turing test because you can't kill it now. It's got to stay alive.
It's got to stay alive.
Well, at least God, that really pisses me off. How many billions did we lose?
All right.
Yeah. We have any other news?
I do. I do.
All right.
Okay. Now it's. Everyone's already heard about the whole, like, you know, the Obama and the, you know, the his priest scandal.
Right.
You know, now that Hillary that talking about, I was under sniper fire when I went to Bosnia. And the everyone else is like, you know, we were throwing flowers at you, lady. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Finally, we have a major campaign scandal on the right. Yeah, okay. Not so much.
On the right?
On the right.
Okay.
The McCain campaign fears losing the Christian right when he's outed as a Magic the Gathering player.
Really?
Apparently.
No way. We got to get him on the show.
He has received several cards from his grandchildren and has become addicted to the game. Apparently, he plays regularly with them. And
it's a battle. I can see
he's got
that.
A few people on tour that he plays with. But now that he's been caught on film playing Magic the Gathering, there's this like big hullabaloo among the Christian right about, you know, he's satanic. There's all this evil stuff. But on the plus side, at least some of the people actually do have a great sense of humor. I was cracking up at this. He ran a primarily white and green deck, says Episcopalian minister Sandy Clare, which clearly supports his pro-life policy. This only validates him as the only viable values candidate.
Oh, my God.
But there's still controversy even there. That's preposterous, says Southern Baptist minister. I didn't get the name. Says a Southern Baptist minister. Yeah. The sheer volume of elves skews the deck in a pagan direction. Yeah. Clearly, this is a heathen deck designed by Satan. McCain is just not the pure white deck player we've been praying for. I love this quote.
That's cool.
Who are these geek priests?
Yeah, I know. And why aren't they near me?
He's going to use the Sarah Angel as his new like campaign logo.
McCain insists that though he bought the cards, he never dealt.
I'm not enough of a Magic Gathering player to know what that means.
This is a great article. Yep. Like the writer has a phenomenal sense of humor. The Hillary camp points out that she herself favors a white deck, but the Clintons have always relied upon strong blue Democratic support. Obama, however, is still besieged by the constant question, is his deck black enough?
That's crazy. That would be cool to get him on here.
Can you imagine McCain?
I would love to get McCain on here. That'd be awesome.
I think we should just have the three of them play a tournament against each other, and whoever wins becomes the new president.
Well, did you hear that Hillary put out a big statement that said she would have a bowl off with Obama for all the marbles?
Rock band off. Like a Guitar Hero.
That would be awesome.
Nice.
That
would be awesome. Them and their proposed like cabinet.
A bowl off for all the what?
All the marbles. Everything. No super delegates. No taking it all away.
I'm glad we have serious candidates.
Exactly.
Do you have one more?
No, I'm good. All right. So, huge news. We got a big coup. And we knew some folks in the post-production department over at Golden Compass.
The Golden Compass movie came out.
Yeah, and we got a great online Skype interview with Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
Yes. Yep.
Crazy.
Man.
The man. So
this guy is a hard worker, too. He only had, like, how many minutes to squeeze this in?
Exactly.
It's a really short interview. There's a reason why it's not a full episode.
Well, he's doing this type of stuff for all sorts of people.
Exactly. So he's doing a junket, you know, and he's promoting the movie as it starts to go to DVD. So he was nice enough to give us a short little press interview. And
so here it is.
Take a look.
The lake. Casino.
All right. Sam, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
Great. Thank you so much for doing this interview with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
All right. So I know you have limited time, so it's really great, again, to have you here. I understand that the Golden Compass is going to be released on DVD. Are you excited or what?
Yeah, I mean... Man, Golden Compass is going to be out on DVD soon, and, I got to tell you something, I could turn back flips about it, and I guess that's how strongly I feel about it, and, I recommend that people rent the Golden Compass at their, local Blockbuster, or, Abbott Pony Express to them by Netflix, or something like that, as soon as possible, and, I want every Sam Elliott super fan out there to rent or buy the Golden Compass, and it's important that you do because, I gotta tell you, I do not want anyone going to see that fucking Prince Caspian bullshit this summer.
Is there a Golden Compass versus Narnia feud or something?
Dungeons and Dragons crowd, I guess, you know, wouldn't be pretty happy about me saying this, but, you know, I realize, you know, the Golden Compass outshined that Narnia bullshit. If I can say bullshit on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, you can say that. It's not
all right. No, I mean, I guess, you know, it's the way a diamond outshines a goddamn tater tot. I guess, the difference between Golden Compass and Chronicles of Narnia. Narnia, I guess you could say, is like the difference between making love to Cher in her trailer on the set of Mask and, making love to Whoopi Goldberg in her trailer on the set of Fatal Beauty. I guess, you know, not to put too fine a point on it.
Well, I don't really know anything. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Coors is the banquet beer, I guess, you know, you could say Narnia is a fucking keg of warm PBR. If you don't want to put too fine a point on it.
Okay. On a positive note, let's talk about your role on the Golden Compass. What was it like to bring Lee Scoresby from the page to the screen? Do you enjoy that?
Lee Scoresby?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I guess that was my character's name.
Yeah.
Fuck, man, I don't know. I guess I just show up to set, try to do quality work. I guess that's what I've always been about. You know, you got, you got quality on work on one side, and then you got some fucking Narnia bullshit on the other. And I guess, you know, we had animal spirits that walked within the Golden Compass. I know that much. You know, my animal spirit was a jackrabbit.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah. And, I guess, you know, even though he was a sad old worn out ragamuffin looking thing, I mean, that, man, a fucking CGI rabbit could have kicked the CGI Narnia Lion's computer generated ass from now till next Tuesday, brother.
Really?
Asian. Cool. No, is that his name, Asian? Asian the Lion?
No, Aslan.
Aslan. Well, let me tell you something. He wasn't a lion.
No?
And Patrick Swayze. Now, there's a lion. The guy's a lion of a man, and Aslan could not hold a comb to that man's glorious blonde mullet, brother, let me tell you. Swayze feckin' gets cancer and still smoking two packs a day. A doctor comes in, gives him a needle, man just fucking folds his arms, wrinkles his nose, and bam. Teleports to fucking south of France, runs up a bill at some beachside cafe, chain smokes, buys wine for the whole restaurant, waiter comes over, hands him the check, Swayze folds his arms again, wrinkles his nose, bam, fucking teleports right back to his fucking hospital bed. Kid you not, he used to do that more on the set of Roadhouse every fucking day, man.
Okay.
Had every part fucking memorized. Yeah, man, that's a line.
Okay.
That ass line could not be more of a fucking sham.
Okay. Sam, what did you say about the allegations that the Golden Compass is anti-religious and specifically anti-Christian?
Anti-Christian? Yeah, man, that's some fucking Narnia propaganda, brother. You pull back the curtain of those religious controversy claims, let me tell you, you'll find Mr. Tumnus is behind that whole fucking deal. You can trust me on that one, brother.
Oh, okay. But what about the anti-Christian?
Yeah, is our film anti-Christian? Well, you know, to be honest, I actually, you know, I haven't seen the whole film.
What have you seen?
Well, I've only seen my part, and, you know, I can honestly say, man, that director cut out a scene. Me and my CGI rabbit companion, well, we defecated in a confessional, and, we took that out. Well, I mean, it may have been because... Yeah, I guess because of some time constraints, but I like to think that we took that out because it did, you know, it did kind of cross the line there. But anti-Christian, so, I don't think you can say that about my movie unless your name is C.S. fucking Lewis the Third. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, in which case, you know, what you deserve is a big throat punch.
Well, thanks for being on Geeks On today, Sam. You've had an amazing career, banquet career. Love it.
Yeah, well, you know, you can thank me all you want, but just don't go see that Prince Caspian bullshit. Just go home, stay home, rent the Golden Compass. And, yeah, I guess, hell, if that's not your bag, just stay home, close your eyes, and imagine what a Ghost Rider sequel will be like.
Okay.
Just don't patronize Narnia, man.
Okay.
Peace to you all, brothers.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Casino.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Woo-hoo. Awesome. Well, crazy. Sam.
He's an interesting fellow.
He is.
Yeah. You know? We did chat like 2 or 3 minutes afterwards, which was sort of a weird conversation. But
yeah. Yeah.
He was nice.
Yeah.
Well,
you know. Dude, all right, well, like that was great.
Dude looks like a saddlebag with a hat on now, though.
He's
nice probably going to listen to this.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Kick your butt.
Can you edit that out?
As busy as he is, there's no way he's going to listen to, you know, come back and listen. He's, like you said, he's doing like...
It's the advantage of the podcast.
I just don't want
his,
like you said,
he's
doing 50 million of these things, you know.
That's true.
So.
All right, well, let's move on to our main topic now, which
is...
Which is... The recap of Battlestar Galactica Season 3. We did it last season. We're doing it now.
Never heard of it.
All right. So from now on, I will be putting my hands over my ears and humming for the next...
You haven't watched any of them?
Matt has seen none.
Oh, I thought you saw the
first half.
No,
we got them. So we're... You know.
Matt?
How late did they release the DVDs?
That is... Absolutely, I cannot believe someone fracked that up that badly. It's been off the air for a freaking year, and they cannot get the DVDs out until a week and a half before the show.
Yeah, they should totally be doing it a month before.
I can only guess that maybe there was, like, you know, some wait for the writer's strike to be completed before it got be released, so that they would make a decent profit off of the DVDs.
And I've been waiting for them on Netflix, and it's been like the first DVD is in my queue, and it says a very long wait after it. So I finally got it. And,
ugh. Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, Ron Moore was one of the spokespeople for the strike, so...
Hmm.
Yeah, surprise me.
Mother bitches.
He was one of the big ones out there fighting. So, yeah, maybe he just stopped it down and said, that thing's not coming out making money unless we make a deal.
Unless we make a profit off it,
maybe he had... I mean, he probably had no control of it, really.
I have no idea.
Have you seen the most recent Entertainment Weekly, though? Katie Sackhoff is in the most recent Entertainment Weekly actually wearing high heels. Not her traditional Starbuck wear. And wow, I never thought Katie Sackhoff was really that attractive. And boy, she just blows the cover off the magazine.
They did one episode where she turns around wearing an evening gown.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I just saw that
blew
one.
Blew my socks off.
Is this in the third season?
No, this was in
First season?
Season 2.0.
You sure?
I've seen that.
I thought it was first season. Okay.
So... I mean, obviously, the big thing that happened at the end was they revealed who the last four Cylons were, Matt.
Did they really?
Yeah, do you want to actually...
should we have the last
what, I need to tell you? Get to that point, can
Darth
you
Darth Vader him? Is a Cylon!
Oh.
All right, we'll have you leave the room at
that point.
So much, Matt. I don't know what...
I'm willing to take some small spoilers, and let me close the door so Kat doesn't hear me in the other room.
Huge spoilers.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so...
Guide the way. It's been a long time.
Let's start out the season. I thought this definitely was the weakest season, although it started out really strong. I thought it really...
I agree, but I also think it was sort of the heaviest season.
Based on hearsay, somebody said that the ending of the third season was the best ending they've ever seen.
Well, that depends, because it also could be one of the worst. I mean...
It's a matter of disagreement.
It's a matter of taste.
I really liked it, but we'll get to that.
Yes. All right, so let's start from the very beginning. As we know, you're going to be humming for an hour, dude.
Yeah.
You think I should just run?
Just abandon all hope at this point.
You actually probably should just go.
Just go out there and ask Maureen to step in.
It's Geeks On Light!
You might want to come back in about 45 minutes.
I would.
I'm okay.
We have to talk about it.
It's up to you.
All right. Okay. Let's be upfront with everyone. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
You know, we're going to be talking about season three. If you haven't seen season three yet, sorry.
Okay. We're going to ruin season three for you. Ruin it.
And if we don't make Matt cry by the end of the episode, we've done something wrong.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to start with the first episode called Occupation. As you know, our heroes started the season on New Caprica.
Okay.
Let me interject here real quick.
Okay.
This was also preceded by the webisode series.
True. Which was like 6 or 7, 5 minutes.
Well, I think it was supposed to be more. It was cut short because of the writer's disagreement over the payment for it.
Oh, okay. Was that it was really weak.
Well, they basically told the writers, no, this is promotional material. You'll be paid once and that's it.
Yeah, at which point the writers were like, what?
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's bullshit, you know? I mean...
Right. Yeah. It's summer. It's summer break. We're going on vacation.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, well, it showed it because those things were just pointless almost.
At the end of season two, they've landed on Caprica, the new Caprica, and the Cylons show up. And the Cylons would take over.
Right.
So all of the people that have been fleeing for so long are now trapped on the planet. The two battle stars escape.
Right.
Orbit of the planet, go to an unknown location at that point.
We get Fat Apollo.
Woohoo!
Fat Apollo, which is my rock band name. That's my rock band name.
Do you spell with an F or a PH?
I do PH.
PH?
So pretty hot and tempting, Apollo.
Yay.
Did you really know that that's what that meant?
Do you have something against the larger, pretty hot and tempting?
I'm just saying. I know if that's what he was intending.
All right, so let's talk about this. You know, this I think is an interesting turn and a start of, I think, some very obvious rip from the headline type of issues that they start bringing up. We have... our heroes are on a planet that's being occupied by the Cylons.
Who believe they are there to do the right thing.
Right.
And so, I got to tell you something. This was one of the most genius parts of that season. And I thought it was really amazing.
I mean, it's a little obvious.
Yeah.
A little obvious, but it worked.
But, I mean, it does the best of what, for example, Star Trek did back in the day, which was it took an issue, which was such a sensitive issue in our psyche, but by putting it in a sci-fi world, it was easier to explore.
He's got black on the right side of his face.
And flip-flopped it.
Absolutely.
Our heroes are in the occupied country, and we have these people there... trying to do good, they believe. But it really is,
But at the same time, I think it can be a little draining to watch because it is so close to the real world.
Yeah.
You know, I loved those episodes intellectually, but it was hard to get through them sometimes.
Did you watch them week to week?
Yes.
Okay, so it'll be interesting to see them all as a DVD and whether or not it's just like reading an Anne Rice novel and it's just a little too much dark chocolate all at once.
Well, maybe they dealt with suicide bombing. They dealt with
the police force being trained by the occupying force.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the great, you know, the cool thing about that is they give you the reasons why a person would do that. I mean, yeah. like someone says, "I'm joining the police force so that we can control our own people and we don't have Cylons arresting. Like we can soften the blow. So yeah. that's the reason why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it because I'm an evil son of a bitch. I'm doing it because I want to help my people out. So I'm going to join the Cylon police force." Well. That doesn't go over well with other people. And I just think it's an interesting, you know, take on that. You know, yeah. we see the viewpoint of that side. We also start seeing sides being drawn, at least what's perceived as sides, people joining police forces. We have a mm-hmm. resistance group forming that's – and we have traitors within the cabinet. Baltar is still the – acting president mm-hmm. of the of the humans.
And he does have some assistance from other human characters.
Yeah, and you know, so it's lines are getting blurry about who's helping who mm-hmm. and the reasons why. So the season starts out, I think, really, really great with Occupation.
In the episode where they finally do break the hold of the Cylons and escape New Caprica, I think is probably the one of the most impressive-looking episodes of the season. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's coming. I have a question. So the next one's called Precipice. Well, what do you guys feel about their way of dealing with suicide bombings? Because in this episode, we have one of the resistance members going into a group of where they were training some of the police officers, and there was also Cylons there, and blowing themselves up.
All right. Okay. I think I'm running it. <You're right. laughs> All right. Call me in half an hour.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you.
All right, we'll see you, Matt.
All right, half an hour. We'll be back.
Couldn't take it anymore.
Couldn't take it.
What do you guys feel about that? And how do you feel like they dealt with that? Do you think it was done well, or do you think...
I thought it was done well. I still just... I don't know. There's a disconnect for me with the concept of suicide bombing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really hard time seeing the nobility in it, so I tend to just be very overly condemning of it.
Well, you know, just, it doesn't have to be noble for someone to think that it needs to be done.
I understand that.
So you know? It's not like someone's rushing in there, hoping that they're going to get bronze statued later.
Yeah, and it wasn't that they weren't trying to wipe out the people; they were trying to kill one of the one specific member of the enemy.
Right, right.
They thought, and
but taking out some of the collaborators wasn't a bad thing.
It was not a bad thing to them.
Yeah. So was it done well with the episode, or you feel like that maybe it was kind of a heavy-handed, forced thing?
Well,
and what do you think their take was saying?
I think it was great in the sense that you saw both sides to it. You saw why they were desperate about it, but I still disagreed with it. But I saw that it came out of desperation for these people because they didn't have any other way to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely heavy-handed, and it was definitely.
You think it was poorly delivered?
No, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed
it. In what way do you think it was heavy-handed? I'm just trying to understand.
Well, just addressing that topic these days is a little heavy-handed.
It's hard to address a topic without being that.
Yeah.
But, one of my favorite parts of it, though, was how they addressed this for the Cylons. Because, the Cylons can't die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just get reborn.
Right.
But I loved it when the Cylons said... they said, just because I get reborn each time doesn't mean it doesn't hurt.
Right.
And, it gets harder and harder. It hurts more and more every time I die.
Right.
Well,
there's an episode in the second season, toward the end of the second season, where the resistance on the original Caprica are blowing people up. And they said, listen, we know that they get downloaded, but if we can make it so that it hurts every time, maybe they'll just leave.
Yeah.
If every week they have to experience death, maybe, hanging out on the planet just won't be. So it's an interesting way of thinking about, hurting your enemy is just mm-hmm. by making it painful, not death.
Yeah.
We also see Tom Zarek and Laura Roslin kind of teaming up.
I thought that was a nice touch.
It's kind of an interesting turn of events as well. So let's move on to Exodus Part 1. This is the beginning of craziness. And also very expensive-looking episodes.
Now, this was a big surprise to me because I actually thought they would stay on the planet longer. I thought they would have more time.
I agree. I was expecting the same thing.
And if you, check the records, by the way,
Aaron called this.
I said,
he called it, and I said
3 to 4 episodes.
And I said, you are fucking crazy. There is no way. There is so much material to mine on there. They could be there a full season. I have to tell you, Aaron,
I knocked it out of the park.
I bow down before your superior ESP or whatever it was. You were right.
Yep, I said 3 or 4. I said either episode 3, episode 4, they will be busting off the planet. Yep. And episode 3 and 4, Exodus 1 and 2. So here we have the Resistance finally getting their shit together. They've got a plan. But because they're receiving signals from Galactica, Galactica has decided to leave Pegasus behind, saying, you go to Earth, I'm going to try to get them out. If we don't, if it doesn't work, we're dead anyway, just keep going. Mm-hmm. Galactica goes back and sends a signal to, and this is also where we start trusting Boomer, which Boomer
Athena.
Is this? Athena.
Yeah.
We start trusting Athena a little bit more because she...
Please seems to be shooting from the hip.
She's the one that, in fact, he sends her down to the planet.
Not shooting from the hip, you mean a straight shooter. Shooting from the hip is when you don't have time to aim and you shoot really fast. Straight shooter is someone that does what they say they're going to do.
Both.
I thought shooting from the hip also meant guileless.
Maybe, I don't know.
Well, anyway.
I could be wrong.
So that's also, I mean, I think it's interesting that they decided to kind of...
You know, it just occurred to me, I'm sorry, not to interrupt or anything, but Matt just left the room. Ain't he editing this?
he can skip over it. Let's just not make mistakes. All right, so we have the split now, and we think our heroes might be in trouble. Pegasus has I also, by the way, called that the Pegasus was be destroyed around this.
You did. You were,
I called it.
I'm looking forward to see what you're going to say about next season.
All right. So we have a cliffhanger with Adama coming into outer space and being surrounded by the Cylons. Mm-hmm. All hell's going to break loose. And all our heroes are going to die. We get to Exodus Part 2.
Yeah. And we are obviously skipping some stuff here. There are storylines we're not touching on.
Yeah, but really, you know, most of the stuff... At this point, these two were real action episodes. They weren't dealing with a lot of, like, issues or hard sells. This is like... This was our kind of fun episodes. They were great, but they weren't...
These were two episodes where we got to see Gaeta do some kind of interesting stuff.
Yeah, in fact, they gave him a serious part this whole season, really.
And Callie. Callie actually had a very interesting little role here. And, you know, not really pivotal, I don't think, but just interesting stuff, you know. So,
what do you guys feel about Fat Apollo, by the way?
I loved it. I thought that was such a cool choice.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. I didn't know if I saw it at the last season episode. Like, it wasn't super obvious. I was like, what? He looks a little different.
I agree. Like, when we came back the next season, it's like, wow, like, he's gotten chunky.
They did it really subtly, and it was really kind of cool.
That was done pretty well. I mean, you know, there's some parts where you're like, oh, okay, that didn't work too well. But
this was
we're not talking Shallow Hal here.
We're not talking the Eddie Murphy.
No.
You know,
Norbit.
But he put on they had him put on a couple pounds, it looked like.
The Nutty Professor.
Mm-hmm. You know. Right. And I also have a question, what you guys felt about, okay, this is also about the time when when Starbuck, by the way, you've learned has been captured and being forced to live this weird life with one of the
Cylons
who's been obsessed over her since last season, really.
And they've given her what they are telling her is her daughter.
Yeah. Now, I did not think this worked. I thought it happened too fast, and she apparently developed this emotional attachment in like one episode.
I agree.
I did not buy it at
all. And I was a little bored by it. Like,
well, I thought it was weird, except for the moment when she had to give the girl up.
That's when it worked, but yeah. I had wished that they had introduced it at the very, very beginning. So I had like 5 episodes to like be like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe this.
But you also didn't believe it because there hadn't been that much time for the girl to have grown up. I mean, it was not.
Yeah, but they were vat growing them. In,
yeah, that, it's a sci-fi series where you've seen babies in vats. I don't have much.
I mean, that all came from that one episode.
Vat babies.
It all came from that one episode in episode or season 2 where they had taken her eggs out. So who knows what they were, you know, force feeding the kid to grow up fast or whatever.
Yeah. But that was a storyline that I just didn't really click with. I wasn't entertained by. I didn't buy.
Yeah.
And I don't think it really led into the rest of the season well, you know.
No, I thought it was interesting that he was willing to continually die over and over for her.
Yeah.
And there was something intriguing about that story a little bit. I didn't think it panned out, but I love the idea that, you know, every week or every couple of days he was getting knifed.
Yeah.
And he would have to die and come back. And it was just this regular thing for them. Mm-hmm. It was like home life.
Now, to maybe, you know, again, to jump to the end and we find out who the different 4 Cylons actually are.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ironies is that you've got this guy here who's playing her husband, and her real husband is also a Cylon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have theories about that whole thing.
You do?
Yeah. I'm curious to hear those when we get there.
Well, yeah. So they've set it up with, you know, with this daughter. So Starbuck has this fake daughter thing going on.
Yeah.
But Exodus Part 2... Commander Leah Dama shows up with the Pegasus, saves our heroes, and they all escape off the planet, essentially what's going on. But this is also the most... this is the part that worked about Saul's wife. This made it worth me really not liking her and really not even liking that whole plot line. I thought that was really tragic. Saul had to killed his wife. Poisoned her? Did he poison her? They poisoned her.
I'm curious. Finish that sentence.
Okay. The scene was done okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it totally worked. And I thought it was very tragic for that couple to do it because they were such a kind of crazy, turbulent couple to begin with. And you could see
That couple, by the way.
I thought it was too much.
I was entertained by them. I
thought she was
dynamic.
Too much. She was too much of a soap opera character for me.
You know what? Having known enough people like that, I bought it. You know?
I guess I don't know anybody that, you know, rub your hands together.
Spend more time in Malibu, my friend.
I guess. But I thought it played out well, this where she was sleeping with the enemy to save her husband. Mm-hmm. Worked totally. All of a sudden, her character made way more sense to me, and it worked best. And later on, Ty's... you know, kind of downfall throughout the season tied to that really worked for me.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And again, what's interesting is, once again, you've got Cylons sharing human beings for sex and for emotional attachment.
Right.
Or using sex as a barter chip. I don't think entirely that they wanted the sex. I don't entirely agree with that statement. I think that they used... the human's desire to trade it in order to do something to that person.
Right.
You know, that's sort of my take on it. But here's the question I want to ask you, because I've debated this over with a bunch of different people.
Okay.
Did Ellen Ty know what was in that cup when she took it from him and she drank?
I thought she did.
I think she knew that was the end of her life.
Okay.
I think that it was very... to me, I thought it was very
That's
clear.
That's what made it more powerful.
Yeah. Yeah,
I agree completely.
She knew... that he had to kill her in that kind of bizarre... she didn't know... it's not like she knew she had to die. Mm-hmm. She knew that he had to kill her because that's the type... because that's what was in him.
Yeah.
You know? And he knew he had to do it even though he didn't want to. It was something he had to do as the type of person he was.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that scene did work.
And it was a really powerful redemption for a character I didn't think was heading in that direction. You know?
Yeah.
I thought it was a very nice piece.
Really, really well done and tragic, very tragic. All right, so we are now off the damn planet.
We're back on the run. We've gotten away from the Cylons. They are
this
chasing us again.
A great episode.
Oh, by the way, we also we have to point out that Gaius Baltar is also been separated from the humans at this point.
And he's left behind.
And I believe he kind of saves them. Remember they were going after a bomb and he kind of stops it at the end? Isn't there a way he like... I thought they were going to nuke the whole thing.
I think he negotiated them to not set the bomb off by offering to help them get the baby.
Right.
Is what I seem to recall.
Right.
You know,
I don't know why that's
been a long time.
I don't know why that has left my brain, but
So we get to Collaborators.
Yeah.
And this is the one I was saying. This was a great episode. I really like this.
And this is a great episode also because it sparks a tone that is carried for quite a while in this season, which
and
I think
carried
is awesome.
Well in a way that wasn't draining, boring, and repetitive. I thought that was very impressive.
Yeah.
So collaborators, we have our heroes on Galactica now seeking revenge on the people that they thought had collaborated with the Cylons during the occupation.
Yeah.
And some hardcore
Retribution
is being handed out in a kind of a dark way. It's done unofficially.
Yep.
By officials.
It's like vigilante military tribunal.
Yeah, exactly. So we have Jammer was one of the guys. They kind of brought him out as one of the main characters, and I believe he's one of the kids that was in the little mini series during the summer.
Oh, really?
Jammer. Anyway, he was one of the guys who joined the police force. So he shot out of the airlock, I think, in the first, 5 minutes of that episode.
Pretty sweet. Pretty quick.
Yeah. And they start going after people one by one.
And this was another one of those episodes where a character I've always considered a very minor character in that series really started to shine. Gata became a real force to be reckoned with in this episode, turned in some excellent performances, and defends his position.
Because he gets put on the chopping block by these people, and he, you know, even though he was up there with the president as the... As the president's number two, he was the man passing down all the secret information to the rebellion, and nobody knew it was him.
Right.
And so they were about ready to kill off one of the most important people of the revolt of Caprica, New Caprica. And I think it's interesting that they decided to essentially they kind of learned their lesson in a way that things are not black and white.
Yeah, but I seem to recall it almost the whole experience of having to defend himself almost kind of destroyed him. I mean, am I remembering this correctly? Like Gata at the end was almost like, I mean,
well, he had guilt through the whole thing. You know, I think he carried that burden even though he was passing, notes back and forth as he was part of it.
Yeah.
And he knew that everybody thought that.
Yeah.
So even if he says, no, I pass notes back and forth, I think most of them would say, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
And he carries that burden and he carries it, you know, continually carries it. Yeah. But I thought it was great that they give him that episode and
brilliant. Totally, I thought it was another brilliant episode because it brings up what is happening over in Iraq. Because, again, you've got basically people who are going around and executing people in Iraq because they felt like these people betrayed them during the Saddam years or vice versa, you know. And
you know, it's a very real reason. It's a contributing factor to one of the reasons we can't just withdraw.
Right.
You know, we can't be out of there overnight because there are people there who have collaborated with us who would be put to death.
Well, that's the question. You know? That is certainly the question.
I don't think it's a question.
No, it is a question. It's absolutely a question. You don't know what's going to happen when they withdraw. It
happened in Vietnam.
Well, it doesn't mean it would happen here.
Because they've really hesitated repeatedly in killing people.
So here we go.
Well,
obviously, Battlestar.
People are being killed already. Yeah, I mean, so obviously, we're only having so much of an impact as is. And the question is, would they be able to handle it themselves you know, and work it out without us. In other words, without us as a focal point to create dissension among them, who knows what they would be able to resolve?
Yeah, I mean, we have an example of Battlestar.
I'm not trying to be fully realistic, but I'm trying to say you don't really know what's going to happen.
I think
you
it's have no clue. Ridiculously idealistic to say no, that I'll just live happily ever after. And
well, no, but
people who collaborate,
it's ridiculously idealistic to think that if we stay in there, everything's going to be happily ever after.
And that we would prevent it.
I'm not saying that was the case, but so, I'm saying it's 100% chance on one side and, you know, 50% chance on the other.
Well, it's a cost benefit question. I mean, you just don't know until you try.
No.
All right, to get back, because we're going to be doing this all night, obviously. Science fiction used to spark a debate, exactly what it's for. So, yes, great episode. Glad that you guys could continue the discussion through real life. But let's move to Torn. This is one of those... God, man, I can barely remember.
I don't remember
that
Torn
episode.
I remember that Baltar basically... the Cylons are having a problem, which is they went on to some base and they opened something, and it gave them all a virus, and they're all dying. And Baltar has a chance to basically make a decision. You know, should he bring it back and kill them all or not? And in fact, it then moves on to
the next episode.
But Galactica making that choice as well.
Now this is interesting, though. This is where I started really not.
Connecting
with Battlestar when we started seeing what. First of all, I think bringing the camera and the story to the inside of a base star was not a good idea. I think it totally. Part of the mystery.
It did remove the mystery for
me.
And
that was really baffling and very intriguing. And when we got to Battlestar, it was very disappointing.
And why weren't they all walking around naked like the Sharon robot was in the first season?
Yeah. I mean, there was all sorts of things that just didn't make any sense.
And also, it just wasn't as fulfilling a vision of what that place should look like.
Or what the Cylons were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, what you found out is they were little bickering, snotty little high school students just arguing all the damn time. Mm-hmm. And I love, you know, one of the things that I really wonder why they abandoned. Remember in season two, they had the episode where the Boomer and the Six, Caprica Six, mm-hmm. Woke up and they decided to start a revolution. And because they felt different.
I loved that episode. Yeah.
Well, what the hell happened? Because to me, that was a story that I thought needed to be in season three. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what they were trying to imply. But I wanted, if they were going to bicker, I didn't want like five Cylons sitting there constantly arguing. I wanted to see, the Cylons aren't the Borg where they all think exactly the same thing. I mean, we have all mm-hmm. kind of thought that the Cylons acted like the Borg.
Yeah.
They had one mind. But now we've seen that they don't. And who is in charge? Who's telling them to do certain things? Right now, we don't know.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just them bitching. And it would have been nice to see, maybe, if we're going to see the inside of this thing, show that maybe there's a division.
And one thing I thought was a little interesting about it was I felt that the – I don't remember the model number. The Lucy Lawless character in this episode. She starts a quest around this time, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of a spirit quest in a way.
Yeah.
That I got a little frustrated by because I wasn't really getting it. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get the importance of it. And the character is clearly going through some soul-wrenching stuff. She is killing herself mm-hmm. repeatedly.
Right.
Starting in this episode onward.
Well, this is where she starts... this is about the time where she starts seeing things during rebirth. And she thinks maybe she's starting to see God mm-hmm. or gods or God, mm-hmm. which is being represented as the unmasked Cylons. Right.
Which, again, confused me, because that means that the Cylons themselves don't know who the other models are until they are discovered by the humans?
Right. Probably. It's a little confusing to me, because the only Cylons...
Well, that would make sense, because Sharon... They have to do that, because otherwise Sharon would know and say, these guys are the Cylons on the ship. I mean, she's a Cylon.
Yeah,
and that's valid.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but I don't know. Some of that stuff didn't make sense. Although there's a super interesting concept they have in there is they have these brain banks of in each starbase. There's a woman stuck in it's kind of like a precog or something. There's
an
oracle. She runs the whole ship through her brain,
but she's so.
She's just out of it.
Her sensory mechanisms are so vast that she can't communicate on a one-to-one level because she's starship-sized, basically.
Yeah, but they do. She babbles.
Yeah.
And when she babbles, the other Cylons believe that she is in direct contact with God and that she's speaking the word of God. I think there's something interesting in that. I hope they just weren't, the writers weren't just kind of masturbating out ideas and not, solidifying, because there's something intriguing about that. It's a little, kind of highly developed, as an idea. I just hope that they take it somewhere.
And there's something beautiful about it,
Yeah.
I really like the...
It's intriguing, and yet it doesn't seem to go anywhere yet in this season.
Yeah.
So Gaius is... trying to save his life by, sweet-talking his way, being favored onto the starbase. They come onto this other starbase that has a virus, which leads us to our next episode, Measure of Salvation. I thought this was an interesting one because at this point, our heroes on Battlestar find out that there's a way of collecting this virus and sending it back onto the Cylons and maybe completely decimating them forever, infecting them and committing
genocide
on them. And they make a choice. There's like people on both sides of this idea, whether they should be doing this or not. And, people start siding up.
Who is the guy that was arguing most strongly not to do this? That was Sharon's wife? Sharon's husband?
Yeah, Hilo, he was the one... Sharon was the one who was saying, listen, you can't kill off my people.
Yeah.
And Hilo has been on her side. I think he's stuck with her through all this kind of craziness. So I think he's like... in step with her no matter what. So, yeah. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting idea to give them that choice.
I love that relationship, by the way. It's one of my favorite relationships in the show.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? I was kind of ragging on Grace Park a little bit about her acting, but I've been watching the second season, and she's been getting better and better. She's not bad. Not bad. Yeah. The beginning of the first episode, season one, she was terrible, but I'm warming up to Grace Park.
Okay. Again, this is one of those ones where I don't know if it's my own expectations and prejudices, but if I remember correctly, the president was the one I was watching the episode and thinking, oh, she'll be the one to argue why we can't commit genocide. And if I remember right, she's the one in the episode to first definitively say, use it.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
Mount it up, get it going, and launch that sucker.
That's why I love Battlestar. You never quite know what someone's going to do.
No.
But she's consistently taken hard stances like that.
With
blowing them out of airlocks, deciding we're going to kill off babies, all that type of stuff. That's not extremely against her character at all.
No, but there's still... I think it's still... It's easy for me... because of her demeanor, to keep overlooking that. So she keeps surprising me.
Right.
All
right.
Then we got Bulldog. That's the next one.
Bulldog? I have Hero.
Oh, Hero. Whoops. Yeah, Hero. Sorry.
Hero. Hero, to me, did not do anything for me. Standalone episode, pretty much.
Yeah. Refresh my memory.
It's about the pilot, the black pilot. His name's Bulldog. He escapes from... he is the actor who... plays
Candyman.
Candyman, but he also is
I know who
the sci-fi show.
It isn't Candyman.
What is the show on sci-fi that that I watch, but you guys can't stand? And actually, I don't watch it anymore.
Stargate?
Oh,
It's about the town.
Yeah.
Eureka?
Eureka.
Yeah, he's on Eureka. So I recognized him.
Okay.
From that.
Oh, it's a different actor than Candyman then.
Yeah. So anyway, but this was kind of a forgettable episode. I mean, but this whole section was lagging in a weird way because it had such a strong start and it hit on such strong thematic elements. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it just kind of like let those elements dissipate and went into this other these three episodes that all were all kind of standalone together.
Right. I mean, but this is also this weird episode where you kind of find out that maybe Adama was at the initial attack that started that one of the, or
oh yeah, he had something to do with
the attack on the colonies that somehow he was
right.
tied and. I don't know. Weird. It was kind of weird.
It seemed like sort of just a desperate tie-in to the webisodes because
maybe
they have that going on there too. And
well. Yeah, it didn't quite work for me, and it never really went anywhere else later. And just kind of was, I don't know, throwaway.
Okay, so yeah, I'd agree on that one. What about should we jump to the next one to Unfinished Business?
Yeah.
Now, Unfinished Business was a very strange episode because this is basically it's about. The crew all getting together to beat the crap out of each other in boxing matches.
The boxing episode.
And a lot of it is flashback and a lot of it's visual. And there's the music was beautiful. I remember that because I remember noticing the music the bear did. But, I mean, it was another strange episode.
Now, this is where – okay. So what we haven't glossed upon or at all is the Starbuck, Apollo – D and what's his nuts from Caprica?
And Starbucks' husband.
I can't remember that guy's name. Anyway,
Starbucks' husband was Anders.
Anders.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, we've had this love quadrangle for a while.
Yeah,
and we're getting to the point. This is where it's now. Falling to pieces, and this episode is solidifies that we have. I think you know all the flashbacks and are about these two really.
Yeah.
And I think this episode's used to kind of starting to finish off this storyline in a way because we start. It gives us a chance to unhook Starbuck from Andrews and D from Apollo. It becomes obvious to them that it's not working and we can end this. And so, you know, we're half a season in and now the chances of Starbuck and Apollo hooking up again are back.
Which I have to admit, I'm a bit of a purist on it. Bugs me. Their relationship bugs me.
Really? You know? I think it's really well done because they haven't.
I understand that and I appreciate it on that level. But on the other hand, there are, with the exception of the president and Adama, there's almost no male-female friendships in the cast. Mm-hmm. All male-female relationships devolve eventually to hot, sweaty action or relationship, you know? There's no platonic bond anywhere to be found by male-female. And in this episode also, we start having a lot of people questioning whether or not Adama and Rosalind hooked up. Because they sort of start implying that a little bit.
I'm glad that didn't go anywhere. Because
the whole, my point
was
between the Starbuck and Apollo relationship. In the original series, it was a buddy relationship,
right?
And I thought it was kind of sad.
No, they hooked up in the original series too.
I still think it's a little sad that just because they flip with the gender of one of them, it has to go to the romantic, passionate.
No, it didn't.
And
have
rather
to.
They
could have done all sorts of stuff, but who
cares? They didn't.
Who cares what the original one was? This is a separate thing.
I'm just saying, it's just one of those things where, like, I would love to see platonic thing.
In the original episode, it was four of 19. Da, da, da. It was section C of.
Oh my god! He just flipped out.
He did. That was impressive.
I understand what you mean because if you think about it, the Battlestar cliques or the groups in which characters react are really microscopic.
Yeah,
it's not like Star Trek where you have eight characters constantly reacting to each other. You have eight two-person groups. You know, you have Starbuck Apollo, you have Laura, Rosalind, and you know,
yeah.
Domino.
No, I dig.
So
I dig.
You have that weird, like, I'm trying to think, like, who else would Starbuck react to? Like, she's never around anybody else. They kind of, it's a strange writing choice where they have, where they just, they pair people up and they stick, you know.
I just think it's funny that they had one episode dedicated to, will we ever be able to make babies again? And I'm like, try and stop your crew, you know? Yeah. You think that's going to be a
realistic
problem?
It's realistic.
No, I'm not going to fight that much. I just find it regrettable that friendships seem rare in the series.
Right. All right, so let's move on.
Okay.
Passage. The Passage.
Refresh.
This is another one of those, like, kind of action things. I didn't really, you know, this is where the population, the food storage gets contaminated, I believe, and they have to, they're going through this, like, tunnel. Isn't that what it is? Like a radiation tunnel they have to pass through?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a tunnel. It was they had to go through a cloud of radiation to get someplace where they had food.
Oh, this is where sort of an ongoing recurring character passed on, right? The cat character died?
I think she survives, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, she dies.
She dies. Okay, yeah. Then okay. Yes.
Radiation poisoning.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a drug dealing episode. Like, she used to be a drug dealer and she still seems
an
entity.
Right. Yes, that's correct. Now it's coming. It's all coming back to me. Blinding
and
light.
She does the gauntlet.
Gosh.
She does the gauntlet.
Yeah, she makes too many runs and willingly sacrifices herself. Now that we've refreshed ourselves on this memory, on this episode, I agree. I don't believe this episode was really kind of a rockin', you know.
I actually liked the episode, but it didn't move.
I actually liked the episode as far as a level of performances, concept, and I seem to remember. I don't remember what the hell the scene was about. There's a scene between Starbuck and Apollo at the end where they're in the Hall of Memories, like sort of the memorial hall. Standing by the images of the pilots who've died already.
Right.
And just thinking that was a really well-done scene.
Well, that's, you know, the respect that Starbuck has toward her in that. I mean, they've been adversaries forever.
Yeah.
But there was always that, you know, you realize that respect was there no matter, you know, no matter what. So, no, I thought they did a great thing with that, with Kat's character. Because she, at first, she was like, she's kind of a secondary character. Mm-hmm. And yet, she's that complex that you feel like it worked.
What did you think about her acting? The Kat character's acting?
I felt they didn't give her the chance to break out from one or two different emotions the entire time.
Okay. I thought it was okay.
Because I remember liking the episode, but I thought that there was something kind of forced about her character.
She was stuck in angry all the time.
Yeah.
She never got the chance to back out of it.
Yeah.
You know, even at the end when she's being heroic, she's still kind of angry. And I'm like, ugh.
Okay.
It wasn't a wrong choice because it's appropriate to the character, but I kind of blame the writers for not giving her more dimensionality.
Okay.
Dimensionality? Is that a word?
Yes, dimensionality. It is now.
Woohoo.
The Eye of Jupiter.
I thought this is the beginning of a new sort of run of several things.
Yeah. I did not like this one very much.
All right. But the possible discovery of the Eye of Jupiter on this planet.
Which is supposed to lead to the next leg of the trip to Earth.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Now, here's also when we start, I believe, at this route time, we start getting the sense that... even though Starbuck has been told over and over and over by several people that she's a key player, this is when we start seeing some visual references that she has got some connection.
Yeah.
Because she has paintings of... I actually don't know if it's this episode, but we start getting these clues that she is connected to the Eye of Jupiter somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I feel about this whole section and this whole Eye of Jupiter thing. It kind of worked with the arrow the first time because it was just okay. But
somebody
now,
has to go get the arrow. That's fine.
You know, having a second, essentially, of the same thing... Mm-hmm. Which is it's another Eye of Jupiter. I mean, another arrow of Apollo, but just named something different. Kind of just didn't do it for me. But
I thought that this idea was so cool. This temple that they were finding, I don't think I ever really felt like it was. I think we need that interesting.
I think we need to kind of round out the picture of the episode for folks.
Okay.
So they land, they find this temple of Jupiter where they're trying to decipher how to unlock the key, unlock the information.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cylons have also showed up.
Yeah.
They kind of enter a detente above planet.
That's how that episode actually ends. Oh, and then we go into, you keep going. Okay. Then we go into a rapture. So
you have people in the temple, you have Cylons in orbit, and now Cylons on the ground approaching the temple.
Yeah.
And sort of a ongoing standoff above orbit.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly.
Right.
And so at this point,
because the Cylons want to know the information too.
Yeah.
They want to get the information too.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we also have
you have the Battlestar Xena saying, if you move on that point, we will blow it to Kingdom Come.
Right.
You know, neither of us will ever have the information. Everything will end here.
Right. Meanwhile, Xena is going bonkers. She's still trying to find...
Lucy Lawless has looped the loop at this point.
Yeah, and she's trying to find the final five Cylons. And she's doing whatever possible to do that and get the baby.
Yeah.
And she's causing...
They actually... Abandon Six. Now, like, to double back, Baltar, Lucy Lawless, and Six have been in this bizarre menage a trois love triangle. Not really a love triangle, just menage a trois.
You know, I think they really can't stand it to have just one person with one person having sex. They have to find some way to put a third element in there somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
we know where their minds, their dirty, filthy little minds are.
She basically turns to Six and says, I understand you're doing all these things. You're not enlightened enough to go where we're going. This doesn't involve you. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I thought, was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, I'm moving on in my spiritual journey, and that does not involve you.
Well, I think it's even worse in that it's we are, and we are not taking you.
Right.
I thought that was an interesting choice. So they go down. Do you want to continue summarizing? Because I don't remember exactly what happened.
They go down. They make their way to the temple. The main guys have found what they were looking for, and I seem to recall they've taken off. There's a bomb that's going to go off.
Right.
Somehow Baltar leaves with the humans, right? Isn't that how it works?
Right.
Because Baltar's on the island.
He's back.
He's down. And then the bomb, they see something right before the bomb goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wakes up back on the ship. And one of the guys that has been the priest in past episodes, they tell him that he's too unstable and they shut him off permanently. Isn't that right? Or was it
him? Oh, it was Lucy her. Lawless.
Lucy Lawless. They shut off permanently.
They box her, which I thought was a very interesting concept. Because they're not saying boxing that one robot, that one Cylon.
They box the line.
They box the model.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting statement, that whatever she found was so powerful and it just carried along her entire...
Now, Baltar, I believe, almost saw wasn't he also...
I think he wanted to see it, but he couldn't.
He couldn't.
The whole deal. Okay. He was frustrated because he couldn't.
And I believe we get the baby back. But Sharon gets her hold of the baby, right?
I thought there was another episode where that happened in. I could be completely wrong.
Maybe you're right.
Sorry, hell of a review, people.
This one is hard. There was like three of them in a row that was blending together so much.
It got convoluted, and unfortunately there was a big gap there, too. Mm-hmm. There was a spatial, a couple months between episodes, I think. I can't recall.
Right. All right, so they get their clue to move on toward Earth,
mm-hmm.
essentially. Okay, we've got Baltar back with the humans. Taking a break from all your worries is the next. So now Baltar is back with the humans, and Baltar is being questioned by our heroes.
Questioned closely.
We also have, this is where Starbuck and Apollo start getting closer and closer, I believe, mm-hmm. as well. And it starts getting a little more complex with them. I think this is the beginning where Baltar starts writing his book in his cell. I think this is the beginning.
Oh, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and this is the then also the part where we start seeing the beginning of the trial of the trial of Baltar, which is like, you know, heading toward the crashing end of this whole season.
So by this point, we're basically getting about 2/3 of the way through the season.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so the last third of the season is going to deal with, in a large part, Baltar's trial.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. So now, you know, I kind of felt it was a little weird. I mean, how do you feel about Baltar's kind of, Baltar's whole character is about weaseling his way through all of his problems. I kind of felt like I was getting sick of that character arc of his.
You know, I'm getting a little sick of him only because he's hitting the same notes all the time. I want to see something different happen with him.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and maybe that's what's coming next season, hopefully. Because I do believe that Baltar's arc implies that at some point he's going to have to become a great leader of them and help them in some dramatic way, that he's going to learn sacrifice. I mean, that's what I would be doing if I was a writer with him, you know, and maybe
right.
This starts to lead towards what's going to happen next season.
Right, right, right. Huh, interesting. All right, so we get a couple episodes here. The Woman King.
This was I thought this was a great episode. This is when Hilo investigates a doctor who he thinks may be harming Sagittarion patients. Sagittarions being patients that don't really believe in science or medicine.
Yeah.
And I actually really, for some reason, liked that episode. I don't know why, but I just thought it was a pretty powerful episode.
I don't remember it moving it was one of those one-offs.
It was a one-off, but I liked it in and of itself.
I'm with you. It was another one of those episodes that was just taking, you know, a real-world situation and putting it into sci-fi.
And by the way, overall, I kind of felt like there were a few too many one-off episodes this season.
Felt like they had their core series, and then they were told we need 8 more episodes. Go.
Well, that's the problem they went with. Yeah. The second season has the same exact problem. If you remember the whole Black Market episode,
I hated that
piece that of crap.
Episode. It's the worst one ever.
And the one where there's a terrorist being held up in a bar, and they have the whole like bar fight for no reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a couple of those in a row there, and we're starting to see it here.
Yeah, well, we're going to actually – what's interesting, though, is that the next three – we have 3 one-off episodes coming in a row. We have The Woman King about the doctor.
Yeah.
The next one is A Day in the Life when Callie and Chief Tyrell are trapped in this area where there's a dangerous hull breach.
Right, and their lives are on the line.
On the line. And I actually thought that was a really well-done episode.
I actually don't remember it.
Yeah, and they have to eject themselves.
It's the one where they're slowly kind of freezing to death. There's a slow pressure leak. They can't get out. And the way that they have to get out is they have to actually explode the outside, go through space, and hit an opening and get pulled
into one of the raptors.
A raptor to survive. And then the last one of the three was Dirty Hands, which was...
I freaking love this episode.
This was a great episode.
This is a freaking awesome episode.
And what makes this a particularly good episode is... Well, first of all, let's say what it's about. It's basically they've got this ship that is responsible for refining fuel.
Right.
And they only let a certain class of people work on the ship.
Well, they were doing it when they got captured, and they just kept doing it. I mean, everyone has the same jobs that they had when Caprica blew up.
Yeah.
So now they're floating away 2 years later, and they're still freaking making their
24/7.
24/7, they're making fuel.
And this is the shittiest ship on the whole fleet.
Yeah, this is the
shittiest
job.
And the worst jobs and the most dangerous. And basically, these people have been turned into what are indentured servants.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they know how to do it.
They know how to do it. And it would take too long to train new people to do it. And it's a great episode. I mean, you know, at what point do you start sacrificing your freedoms for humanity? Yeah. At what point?
And to complete the picture, it is a fuel ship. Without their constant work, they can't keep making the jumps. The Cylons catch up. Everyone dies.
So they stop working.
Yeah.
They strike, and they send the perfect person to deal with this episode, which is our hero. You know, out of all the heroes that we've been following, Chief Tyrell, he's kind of the working man out of all of them. In fact, he was the head of the union on New Caprica.
Right.
He goes over there to figure out what the hell's going on, and he sees... he totally understands. And they come to him, they say, listen, you know, just because we were on here when the planet blew up doing this shit doesn't mean we have to do it forever. And just because we came from a planet where we were all steel workers, essentially, and low-class citizens, doesn't mean we have to stay that way. We want to do something else. Why don't you guys come over here and shovel coal? I think it was an awesome episode because, yeah, I mean, what do you do? Like, how do you get around that?
And I think it's a very important episode because it's the only one this season that deals with survival
and continuation. This felt like this is one of the first episodes that I felt this is classic Battlestar Galactica from the first season.
Yeah,
like to me, this was like I was like, this is awesome. This is
real episode.
This is a real hardcore episode dealing with issues that I remember.
And it was beautifully done too.
And you know, all this, you know, God this, God that, and all this was getting so high and mighty, and this totally came crashing down. It was like a breath of fresh air. So thank God for this one. All right, let's move on. I can't remember if anything significant happened pushing the main storyline, but I don't think so. I think this was really a one-off episode. But here, Maelstrom, oh shit, what was Maelstrom? I remember this being just kind of a whole bunch of people were just complaining.
I remember it had something to do with Kara and they're wondering if she was fit for duty.
Right.
You know, but I don't remember. I don't really remember much about it, which probably means that it wasn't. You know, if it's not that memorable to any of us, it probably wasn't a great episode.
Right.
Is this the...
It's probably one of the best episodes
very
ever.
Pivotal episode where Kara makes a certain maneuver that changes her status in the series?
Oh, shit. Maybe you're right.
Because I've been wondering about that. I figured maybe your synopsis would bring that up, which episode that happened in.
Okay. You're right. This is a very important episode. I didn't think it happened here, but you're
I was
right.
wondering.
All right, so Starbuck. This is the reason why Adama and Kara are kind of at it is because Kara starts seeing this raider out in front of this big gas cloud. It's like a giant vortex. This is also when we start seeing that she starts having the flashbacks of her paintings of this maelstrom.
And of her parent. And her relationship with her mother.
Exactly.
Why she's like this.
And she starts falling apart. She starts seeing this ghostly raider as she goes out. And everyone thinks she's bonkers.
Yeah, every time she goes out, she sees it.
Right.
She breaks formation to follow it. Her wingman, Hot Dog, never sees it.
Right. And they have an oracle coming, telling her that this is, you know, she's more and more important. And this is the episode where we start realizing that there's something grand going on with her. Apollo decides to go out with her toward the end. She sees this crazy Cylon ship that she goes after. Apollo still doesn't see it, and she goes tumbling down into the maelstrom. That she's been painting.
And she dies.
She's gone. She disappears forever. That's right. Very important episode.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I thought that happened. I'm surprised it happened. Yeah, it's weird. So, yes. So we have the death of Starbuck. And for a while, I knew she wasn't dead forever. I mean, come on. It just wasn't going to happen.
It just seemed like it, though.
But they did they did do a pretty good, it was a couple episodes, and she joined the cast of Bionic Woman.
Yeah, she went away.
Which was a great, a misdirect, I thought. Yeah. I mean, because I was like, oh, shit, she took another job? I mean, that to me was the biggest misdirect of them all.
Yeah.
Is that she joined the cast.
That was my thinking. Like, okay, she actually got tired of the series and went to network TV.
Right.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So I had this weird, like, even though I was like, oh, come on, I'm not that dumb. All of a sudden, when she joined the cast, I was like, well, okay, that's a little weird. So it did throw me off there a little bit. So, yes.
So the next three episodes are actually almost...
One giant episode. Right.
And it's The Sun Also Rises, Crossroads Part 1 and Part 2.
All right. So let's talk about these.
Okay.
Gaius Baltar is on trial.
Yes.
We get this interesting lawyer character that comes into play.
I liked him.
I really liked him. But we also have a terrible plot device, super Star Trek-y. I'm fine. I guess it kind of worked, but having Apollo become a lawyer's assistant, which was just completely ludicrous. Thank God there was an episode.
It was a very Will Riker moment, wasn't it?
It was very Star Trek-y.
Yeah.
But there, thank God there was at least one moment where Gaius Baltar stands up and goes, "For God's sake, you're not going to let this fighter pilot be my lawyer, are you?" in the middle of court. Because we were all thinking it, and at least the writers kind of knew that I hope that this wasn't like the best way of doing it.
It wasn't very in tune with his character. We've never seen him show any type of thing that would indicate that he would be a good lawyer. He's been a good leader, but he's never showed that he would be a good lawyer. He's been a good fighter pilot, never shown he'd be a good lawyer.
And he wasn't really the lawyer, and even at the end...
But I thought it fit his code of honor.
Yeah.
You know, and that, for me, that was enough.
Well again, we have him taking the stance that he truly believes in, which he's done like three other times.
Yeah.
Where he's gone against his father a couple times, gone against the president. He's done this repeatedly. This is 100% his character. He's decided to go against everybody else and join this thing, which is good. It's fine.
And it was a nice dynamic having him against his father. That was truly interesting.
But his father
dynamic.
Put him. Yeah. You're right. But that it was
his father didn't. Put him in there. His father didn't want him to be.
Oh, right.
It was the lawyer that did it. Now, the lawyer was such a good character, so well acted, so well written.
Yes.
He was such an exciting character. I hope we see more of him.
I don't.
I kind of agree with Aaron. Like, he was definitely a small taste that should probably end there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was great, trust me. And great actors, great acting, great writing, all that. I always wish for that. But sometimes I'm hoping they just write another great character, find another great actor.
Okay.
To me, that would work better. I think he... And what I really liked about these next couple episodes is it was putting the entire... It wasn't putting Gaius Baltar on trial. It was putting the entire fleet and mindset... The wounds that were caused by the very beginning of the season has been haunting them through the entire season. And now they're putting themselves on trial, really. And that, I think, the lawyer trick was to get Apollo to become the lawyer at the end, not because he was a good lawyer, because he knew that a lawyer saying these things was not going to convince anybody because he didn't play a big, significant part in the... in the fight on New Caprica, that it needed to come from somebody that was just as dirty as everybody else. He left Caprica. He has wounds as well as anybody else.
Yeah.
And I thought it was an awesome speech at the end about, listen, you can't put one man on trial for the sins of all of us, which I think was a really well-written anyway, a summary of the whole season, frankly.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And the ending moment, man, the ending moment, if I remember it correctly, was genius. Where this lawyer has been this manipulative guy the whole movie, and he's walking around with a cane. And in the very end, he leaves his cane and just goes walking off.
Yeah, it's a little Kaiser Soze.
Little Kaiser Soze, yeah.
But it was great. I loved it.
Well, I also like how Gaius Baltar says, hey, I've got this book. I need, and people are going to be after me. I need a lawyer. He goes, I don't like you. I don't want to be your lawyer. I did this because it was my job. So, bye.
Yeah.
Now, I was expecting the guy to just turn around and be Cylon, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised.
I thought he would have been too obvious.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the reveal of the Cylons since you brought it up.
Okay,
so.
So.
Our four Cylons are.
So, in the last, very last episode, as the.
In the very last minutes of the very last episode.
No. Through the whole episode, you started. There was this indication that something was going on.
But you didn't know what. People were hearing music.
Unfortunately.
And freaking out.
Unfortunately, this to me did not play out very well and was a little cheesy for me.
It was done a little cheesy only because the music was
too well known.
Too well known, right.
Like When the instant someone said, "Is there some way out of here?" I was like, "You got to be effing kidding me!"
And but as someone who doesn't know that song, I've never heard that song in my life.
You don't know a single rock song.
No, I don't. So, you know,
so the
point is, as the person who is not representing the
0.0001% of the viewing audience. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Why are you mocking my positions today?
I'm just facing
every time
that.
I put forward an opinion, you just mock the opinion.
Because they're wrong.
You don't counteract the opinion.
But I
You're
mock
just attacking
love.
The opinion.
But I mock with love.
No, you don't.
Right, so it's go, loving mockery.
It's offensive.
Go, I mock with love.
So as the person who doesn't know the song,
right.
I actually quite liked it. So okay. I don't have your context
right.
of
it,
that.
It is a great
Without
song.
The... regardless, not knowing the song, I right. don't have the same offense that you right. do.
So you didn't. So you obviously didn't catch on because you didn't know the
song. No, I didn't get it. I really enjoyed myself, actually.
So yeah. I had a problem it being so obvious, and I felt a little like some cheese working. I like the concept. Like I understand exactly what they were trying to do in a way, and I kind of was like, I wish maybe they had massaged it a little bit more, something. I don't know what hearing music means.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it just means they're getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the only clue I got. But in addition to that, like salmons to the breeding ground, the music was drawing four people who we know to a room in which they supposedly revealed that they're Cylons. No, well, they think that they are Cylons.
Right.
But there's... That's it. They yeah. think that
I,
themselves...
I think it's pretty clear.
Hang on. Just...
I think it's pretty clear that they are actually Cylons. I
because...
Mean,
why?
Because they leave one out.
So the only person that they could have possibly left out would be Ty's wife, because how was he married for 30 freaking years and be a Cylon?
Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's the question, because I mean, if he was married for 30 years, then maybe the Cylons have been on Earth for a long time, and that's something we're going to have to find out. But
I don't think
Ty's wife is going to be the Cylon.
Well, I'm just saying that would be the only way of making it make sense.
I disagree.
So do you think Cylons have been in for 30 or 40 years have been in play?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Now, why would...
Or I think they're going to say that they made a Cylon to look like Ty and killed him and replaced him. One of the two.
Oh, so you actually think they can replace people?
That actually does make sense to me. That was something they have brought up before. I think it was Six questioning that. Was there another one of me? Was there ever a real
I don't
one,
think that they're Cylons, quite frankly. It doesn't make mm-hmm. sense that Tyrell and Boomer, who, you know, fell in love at some point, were both Cylons, because that's just kind of off the Cylon
I'm sort
code.
Of meta-thinking about it, unfortunately. And I can't help thinking that if the big season ender, right, is the reveal of four Cylons, and then next season they go, no, haha, they weren't really.
Fooled you!
Yeah, I think it's
But wait a minute.
Cheap.
They didn't say that they were Cylons.
They did say they were Cylons.
No. They said they thought they were Cylons.
Yes.
But
which speaks more loudly to me than somebody else coming to them and saying, you are Cylons. If that were the case, I'd probably be on your side. But four people standing there looking at each other and coming to their own realization.
And here's the other thing that doesn't make any sense.
Nobody fooled them into that.
Here's the other thing that doesn't make any sense to me. All right. So you have these Cylons, these special Cylons that mm-hmm. no one's seen. Colonel Ty. That makes sense if you're going to have a special Cylon. You make one off. That's going to get on the Battlestar Galactica. Then you have Anders, Mr. Special Cylon, who's been on the planet most of the time, and he happens to sneak back on board. Like, mm-hmm. what's the point? I just don't understand why they would be special, or this group of... If you said it was Adama, Captain Ty, and Roslyn, I'd be like,
if you look at it from another perspective, though... Each of them got into key positions to be someone to be next to and the most trusted person to someone in extreme power.
Hmm.
Or wields extreme respect in the case of Starbuck, you know?
Hmm.
So, yeah, they're not you know, they're not major powers themselves, but each of them got into a key position to manipulate someone very important on that fleet. Assistant to Adama, assistant to the president, assistant to Starbuck, probably the most influential of the soldiers, you know. And who's number four? I'm blanking.
There's Tyrell,
Tyrell. You know, he's sort of the assistant to Battlestar Galactica.
Well, he's the chief of repairs. On
Battlestar. I don't see it really.
They're uniquely actually outside of Anders, they are uniquely positioned to actually destroy the entire fleet.
But that's not what they're positioned there for, because they would have done it already.
Well, maybe.
I mean,
there must be
another reason for them to be there.
And once we understand that reason, we'll understand the actual goals of the Cylons.
But, I mean, let's put it this way. The Cylons have been in a position to destroy the fleet before, too, and they haven't. So something else is going on.
Right. There's obviously they have a plan, apparently, and we don't. It seems like their plan's been meandering.
There's one other question I kind of have, which is the president. I'm going back to an obscure episode in season two, I think. The president had cancer and then was injected with basically, you know, the stem cell stuff from the hybrid baby. Mm-hmm. Now, one assumes that those cells were replaced by something. If those cells were replaced, is there a reason why we shouldn't believe that she may be one of the next evolutionary steps? You know, just this injection.
Maybe it's not like, you know, the Borg was taking over. Maybe it just had an element that helped her.
Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's... I actually... You know, they shot Adama in the first season, and he didn't die.
That's true.
So, I mean, I don't understand why it can't be a misdirect. And I think it is. I don't think that these... It doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm not going to say I'm disagreeing with you completely. Mm-hmm. It seems a little kind of a weird reveal to me. Mm-hmm. I remember at the time just being so surprised by it that it seemed unreal.
I'll go the distance. I'll tell you I'm disagreeing with you completely.
All right.
In fact, I will bet you dinner at Mario's Peruvian restaurant that they are all four Cylons.
Okay. And I'm going to say that they are not.
There we go.
Loser has to eat a roll doused in that green sauce, just doused in it, dripping.
Of the hot sauce.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
We want to enjoy.
But I'll buy.
We want to enjoy. Now, the other reveal was that Starbuck wasn't dead.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You mean they have misdirects all the time? Boy, I'm already getting hungry for Mario's.
We knew Starbuck wasn't dead. And
I'm just going to point out that
Mario sounded awful good to me, too, in fact.
All right, so, but her last words, which I think is probably one of the last things you find out, mm-hmm. is that she's been to Earth and she has come back to lead us back. Now, I don't know why it's going to take an entire season to get there, but she did it in four episodes. She did it in three episodes there and back, but it's going to take him a whole season, mate. Well, who knows? Maybe it'll be like Galactica 1980.
They'll get to Earth
in episode one, and we'll have a whole season of them on motorbikes.
Oh, for shame. Oh, no.
Come on. That would be great. Motorbikes.
So, is now the time we make predictions for next season?
So let's make predictions.
I want to hear your predictions, Aaron, because you were spot on with a lot of them on this last one.
I don't know. First of all, my big prediction is they're not Cylons.
Wrong. The four are not Cylons.
I think that Gaius Baltar might be. I'm not absolutely sure on that one, but he's got to be something really significant. I hope he is. He better be. Either the downfall or not.
I think Gaius Baltar is going to become a hero in the next season. He's going to find his sacrifice.
Okay, so flawed that he's definitely an individual of humanity. He's supposed to be representing us.
I think there's going to be some serious deaths. I think maybe Gaius Baltar might die. Maybe he might be at the very end, but I think he's going to go. And I think they might kill off maybe a boom. Maybe I don't know. I think there's going to be we're going to see some deaths. I think that these guys want to end this series, and they want to end the storyline.
I'm guessing Hilo, Athena, and the baby continue on. It's too much of, like, you know, the Joseph, Mary, mm-hmm. you know, savior thing. Mm-hmm. My prediction would be Adama and the president both die before reaching Earth.
Okay. I can see
that. Making heroic last stands of some sort. Probably
Starbuck
together.
Can't die anymore. She's done it once.
Died already. Also, Gaius Baltar, my prediction, heroic death covering the tracks of humanity or something like
some salvation,
that. Yeah,
some
salvation. Yeah, a salvation sacrifice of some sort.
I agree with that.
My prediction is either Kira or the president are going to be the Cylon, the fifth Cylon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the president would make more sense to me. Starbuck doing it just doesn't make doesn't make any sense.
Well, anytime they've had anyone have sort of a weird intuition up to this point, they've become a Cylon, if you believe that Tyrell is a Cylon. Mm-hmm. So, but I think the best reveal would be that the president was a Cylon because she's been the one that's been so hard on them the whole time. So, but of course, I guess then it also wouldn't make sense that her assistant was a Cylon. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Hmm. It seems like covering too many bases there.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Hmm. So I think we're going to see a lot more of the ghost of Gaius in Six's head.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting to see the parallels between the two of them as they sort of start to push things together. I think they're going to start to – those two characters and their ghosts mm-hmm. are going to start to come together in some way.
I think we're going to see a resurgence of the schism in the Cylons.
Yep,
I believe that. Because Lucy Lawless showing up in all of the promos, it's clear that she's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's unboxed, there's going to be something going on.
Okay. Do you think they're going to find Earth? And what state do you think Earth is going to be in? Is it going to be modern-day Earth? Ancient Earth. Well, we have a song.
I have been completely off on my predictions on this before. But again, to me, the best climax for the series and a great ending point would be them finding Earth. And the story of what happens afterwards is for another time. You know, mm-hmm. it would be...
Galactica 1980.
Yeah, no, actually, it would be probably the best ending would be just something where they're all sitting there teary-eyed and they see Earth getting bigger and bigger and it's like...
So you don't know what the condition of Earth is.
Yeah. Alternately that or they reach Earth and have to make a stand, you know? I mean, I could see that, but I think that just opens too many questions. You know, you want more at that point.
You don't think they'll make it open so that they... Do you think... I don't know how it works over there. Do you think that the studios say they will not effing find Earth because we want to keep this damn thing open?
No, I think that...
Do you think there's enough creative pull to do whatever they want with that series?
I think that... Well, first of all, again, we have to remember that BBC... finances half of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the studios are split. They don't have the power they would normally have. And second, I think that the writer has said this is what's going to happen, and he has enough pull at this point to say basically whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know.
By the way, did you hear this rumor? Or it wasn't rumor. Ron Moore said that after the writer's strike, he had the whole writer's strike to think, they scrapped the whole last second half of the season that they wrote and they started from scratch.
No, I didn't hear
that. We just had a better idea and we decided to rewrite it.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
That's
amazing. The writer's strike helped us, is what he said.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, it's amazing. You take a little creative time off, you can come up with better ideas when you got more time sometimes.
So I'm curious, final season of the series, which, by the way, I love.
It's been my favorite favorite series probably since Babylon 5.
This has been a great, great, great series, and I'm glad that they're ending it.
I want five seems to be the holy number for me. I would love to see it go on for five seasons, but if they believe four is what they want and what they need,
mm-hmm.
I think they've earned our trust at this point.
I feel like it, you know, like they've had the troubles, you know, fighting through food shortage troubles. They've had this, you know, Cylons attacking over and over. I think they're done. Like, I really do feel like they're done. Like, another whole 26, 23 episodes would be really stretching thin, I think.
And I could understand that.
So, anyway, maybe they'll just do another great... Oh, by the way, Children of Men, the TV series, announced David Icke? Is that his name?
Is it David Icke that's doing it?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean anything to me. Ron Moore is the guy that is the heart and soul of this.
Yeah, because, you know, Bionic Woman came from the...
David Icke has some weird fucking ideas. I've heard a couple things about this guy. He's and I can't talk about him, unfortunately. But Ron Moore is the heart and soul of this show.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's my predictions. Can't wait.
Let's invite Matt back in.
Okay.
And then we'll tell him who the last four Cylons are.
Cool.
And then we'll do our bit.
Yay!
Welcome back. Can I listen now?
Yes, you can listen.
Okay.
He's actually been sitting in the living room doing that for the past 45 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Okay, so we do have a geek bit this week.
Little geek bit.
Mine's terrible, but...
Fuck. No disclaimers.
All right, so this week we decided to do geek punchlines.
Yeah.
These are not the jokes of a geek joke, but only the punchline.
Just the punchline.
Of a geek joke.
Of a geek joke.
Okay, so who's going to start? I only have one.
I'll lead it off. I've got too many. Look, I'm sorry. When you hear that her last project involved working with a guy in a gorilla suit and a plumber, you just make certain assumptions about a woman named Princess Peach.
Okay.
I liked it.
By the way, you're not supposed to laugh at any of these.
And
we'll help you
hard.
Out.
Right. All right. Descartes says, drunk? I think not. And then he vanishes.
Yeah.
Peter.
Cookie right. To ergo sum.
So,
we get it.
All right, you're on.
The okay. Elf Queen crossed her arms skeptically as she looked at the pantsless hobbit and said, well, they might be your lucky charms, but they sure as shit ain't magically delicious.
Jeez.
Interesting. God. Interesting.
That's horrible.
But a boom.
Mine's terrible.
Why don't we come back to you? Right, we'll go around again since you only have one. Let's see. Careful what wishing for you be. Yes, the genie made Chewbacca physical education teach and was my driving instructor, Han Solo, but Yoda, my high school grammar teacher, was.
That's kind of cute, actually. I kind of like that one in some ways.
That's good.
It's cute.
It's cute. Right.
Bury him. That's what you do with dead chemists.
I kind of like that, too.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Okay.
No, I approve.
Along that vein. So Einstein shut down the malfunctioning time machine and looked at the charred, smoking corpse of Alanis Morissette and said, she's just a little bit ionic, don't you think?
Mine's terrible. I should need to read mine.
Go read it.
Shepard turns to Joker and says, hey, there's no reason to take that lower right tone with me.
Lower no. right.
Think it. About it. Think about it. You'll get it. Those are
it's
you
a,
played.
It's a dialogue tree joke. It's not that funny.
Mass Effect? Come on.
Mass Effect?
Think about it.
Lower right tone. Okay. Move on. Please.
All right. I'm cheating on one. I have a setup. It's necessary. If a thin, hairy, gay guy is an otter, and a large, hairy, gay guy is a bear, what is a really, really large, hairy, gay man who plays Dungeons & Dragons called? An ogre!
Excuse me, I'm just going to go smash my head with the door, between the door and the door frame, okay?
Apologies to all large, gay Dungeons & Dragons playing gay men out there.
You know, we actually put in a sound effect there.
Yep,
we
didn't
get real. So you actually did the full joke and the... That's cheating.
Yeah, I did.
All right.
I cheated.
All right. Sir, do you have any idea how fast you were going? Heisenberg. No, but I know where I am.
That's good.
See, he had a setup, too.
Well, but he could have set it up as... No, officer, I don't know how fast I was going, but I do know where I am.
Yeah, I could have, yeah.
And true. That would have been more...
But he didn't, did he?
Yeah, it's true.
That's good. All right, everybody. That's our show for this week. Yes, we had one not too long ago. So anyway, we hope you have a good geek week, and we'll see you soon. Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Awesome. Bye-bye.
Rock it out.
Peter.
Geek it out.